Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of Inside Curling. It's the March 19th, the week of March 19th, with our two World Curling Hall of Famers, Kevin Martin, of course, and Warren Hansen. We do it each and every week, but we also do special shows. This is curling season, man. The Women's Worlds is on, and Kevin, you're down there.
I am. Been down here for the whole thing so far.
You don't sound happy. Are you happy?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. No, the games have been great.
Well, of course, we're going to talk about that. We couldn't do it without all of our sponsors. Of course, we couldn't do it without Kevin and Warren. We want to thank Jackpot City, who brings you what's happening around the curling world. Coyote Tractor, the sponsor of Hot Rock Topics. And it's always hot, sizzling. And Goldline, who brings you In the House. Here's what's on the show today. Speaking of Goldline, In the House, we got our special guest, WCF Vice President Graham Prowse. We've had him on before. We're going to bring him on. Is he down there, Kev? Probably. I'm sure it's the world's.
Absolutely. He's here. Yep.
Good. What's happening around the curling world? The Women's World Championships is on. It's in Sydney, Nova Scotia. The last time I looked, Canada was doing just fine, baby. Just fine. So I don't know how they did today or late last night. So we'll find out from Kevin what's going on there. Maybe we'll get some comments from Warren. The Canadian University and College Championships concluded this past weekend in Fredericton. And we're going to see who won. Also, the Canadian Mixed Doubles is on down in the Maritimes in Fredericton. Now, don't get upset with me, Kev. Sometimes Maritimers, they get really upset if you say they're Easterners or Maritimers. I never did get it straight. Yell at me, not anybody else. We're going to look at a couple of emails under Hot Rock Topics, which we do each and every week. And also, what are we hearing or what are you hearing? We've got an email from a fan who's asking some questions about player percentages. Great topic. How do they do it? How do they figure them out? Who likes them? Who doesn't? Do they pay attention to them? All that coming up. In the House is brought to you by Goldline. Goldline Curling's Momentum shoes are unbelievably comfortable with a fast, reliable slider and a gripper that will keep you steady on the ice. Learn more at goldlinecurling.com. It's our special guest spot. We do it each and every show, and we've had unbelievable guests, and this week is no exception. He might be the highest-ranking Canadian in the world of curling. It's not you, Kevin, okay? It's not you. We are joined by a Canadian, Graham Prowse, who is the Vice President of World Curling, formerly known as the World Curling Federation. Graham, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here. Great. Enjoying Sydney at the Women's Worlds. It's great.
Are you ready for my big comedy line on the World Curling Federation has now just gone to World Curling?
Absolutely.
Here it is, boys. The World Curling Federation, where we no longer give an F. Oh.
Oh, my goodness. And we were all waiting in anticipation
for that. I'd probably give that an 8. That's an 8 for sure.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Graham. Yeah, if there's people, if there's vacancies on the board, Graham, let me know. I'd be happy to sit in. I guess we'll ask you about the change, first of all, from World Curling Federation to World Curling. Was there a big backstory here or just something you guys wanted to do?
Yeah, just freshen the brand. I think, Jim, we're about a year and 2 months ago, we had a ideation summit. We called it in Toronto. We brought in a bunch of people from around the world, athletes. We brought in TV people. We brought in other federations, other international federations. And, you know, part of coming out of that was just to try and refresh the brand and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of start off, you know, heading in some new directions and some refocusing and so on. So I think it was timely. I think it's a much fresher, cleaner brand. It's saves us the F. As you say,
right?
I think it's been good.
Good. Speaking of that, Graham, I can only imagine that when there's a World Curling event, it's probably like the governor's meetings in hockey, where all of you are together. I'm sure you must be slam packed during the week with meetings. Can you give us an overall general idea of what World Curling is working on these days and what's sort of front of mind and bring everyone up to speed?
Sure. So lots of stuff going on for sure. You mentioned the meetings and, you know, having these events and people together. This one's a bit of an unusual one where the world event in Canada is often not that we don't see a lot of our member associations or representatives at. In 2 weeks, we're actually heading to Schaffhausen, Switzerland for the men's worlds. We're having open meetings there, and there's where we'll see a lot of our members. There'll be even more meetings, but I certainly take the opportunity at these events to meet with people from around the country. There are a few people from around the world here as well. So it's a good opportunity to, you know, just see what the state of the union is, I guess, a little bit in different countries. And as I say, we've got stuff happening, you know, a lot of things going on. We're looking at, you know, from an event standpoint, we're always looking to, we'd love to resurrect the World Cup, you know, at some point, that sort of thing. So there's lots going on behind the scenes in addition to the event here.
I wasn't aware of this. Is there was a bit of an issue with the streaming, but you have an update on that.
Yeah, we certainly had some struggles out of the gate here out of Sydney with the streaming. I know there was a lot of frustration. You could see it on social media. We were also receiving emails and comments and questions and frustration back, you know, which is, you know, when it doesn't work right, we have to accept that. And I can assure you that we've spent the last few days working really, really hard on it. I just wanted to, you know, kind of give an overview of kind of what we're doing with broadcast and streaming and what happens when these sort of things happen. So first of all, you know, a lot of Canadians especially would be used to being able to pick up streamed events from events all over the country, around the world. Those are kind of, you know, they go from the production right straight to the internet, and you can pick them up off of YouTube. You can, some of them come off of the Curling channel, which is our channel. Some of them are available on other platforms. Here, what we're trying to do is we're trying to integrate streaming into the whole broadcast mix. So we do a full sheet or two of full TV broadcast from each draw, and then what we try and do with the other two sheets is we try and do it stream to different levels. So we have different levels of show. We describe that, and Kevin's working as one of our commentators on multiple different kinds of shows while he's here. And so what we're trying to do is trying to do as much as we can, get as much content out as we can. But to give everyone an idea of the magnitude of the operation, you know, at an event where we're doing two sheets, we can spend up to $800,000 to produce that event and to distribute it.
Wow.
So it's not cheap. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to take the best of the streaming production that's out there, try and outfit them with a little better equipment, and then work some magic in the background so that what you see from a stream production isn't that different from a full TV production. So somebody in the industry would notice a difference, but for people mm-hmm. that are looking to access the content, it's really good high quality. Here we ran into some technical issues that took us a while to resolve, but today you know, we had some shows put out that were at the streamed level, at the high streamed level, that were pretty good. They were kind of back to where we were looking to have them all along. So it's just one of those things. A lot of tech in the background, I can tell you.
How's the audience for viewership with curling?
So it's very strong. So we have a couple of strong markets outside of Canada. So, you know, I know Canadians, we're spoiled. We have a lot of curling on TV. We get TSN, Sportsnet, and then I'd mentioned the streaming before, right? So we have a lot of content out there. But actually for us at World Curling, our biggest market's not Canada when it comes to the audience. It's Japan, Korea, depending on the event, Eurosport, China is huge. So we can sometimes double, triple, five times the number of viewers on a television production into those territories. The other thing is with our streaming on the Curling Channel, you know, we generate a lot of income on that. Last year we were, you know, we're somewhere in then between 150 and 200,000 US. And I know there's a constituency out there that would rather we didn't charge, but that money we don't take, and it doesn't just, you know, go into our revenue. We take that, reinvest it in more streaming productions. So that's kind of where we're headed.
Canada's in like fifth or sixth place behind all those other countries. Let's go, Canada. Come on, get up there. Kev, why don't you go ahead?
Where are we going to start? First of all, thank you, Graham. And we've been friends going back, well, before you were with the Alberta Curling Federation. I don't even know when that was, but a long, long time ago. So thank you for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. And Jimmy, I was one of the meetings that Graham had this week.
Oh, well, there you go.
All right. Had a chat this week about a million different things. Well, it's just, there's a lot of things going on in curling, and you know, I really enjoy talking to Graham. Really enjoy talking to Hugh and Bo Welling. There's a really good group right now. But the different levels of show, there's a blue show, to separate them, they just call them different colors. There's blue, green, and pink that are kind of different levels. And but I did a pink show today that was just spot on. It's so many games. There's so many games. It was Italy, for goodness sakes. Yeah. Terrific game. Italy against Canada. And it was just really, really good. So now that's the streamed game. And then green is a step up, and then blue is like a full-on complete production, and it's really neat in behind the scenes for anybody that has a chance at a Worlds or something to figure out, to come and ask some questions, because it's really, really cool. I want to talk to you about mixed doubles, though. So everybody that listens to our podcast knows how much I love mixed doubles. My concern, Harry Lill, great curler, great mixed doubles curler, it was one of our broadcasters, one of the commentators this week. And there's just not a lot of big events for mixed doubles, but yet it's an Olympic element, a discipline. I guess, how are we going to grow mixed doubles from a world curling perspective so that we get more of the top curlers playing it for four straight years and not sort of dipping the toe in during the Olympics and then stepping back to the four-person game?
That's a really good question, and something we talk about all the time. And we have typically relied on external events to generate opportunities for teams to play. So you can see in Europe, it's actually, they're way ahead of what goes on in North America. They've had a lot of events over there for a long time. I think it's coming in Canada, but I think something we can do, and something we've talked about doing, has to do with the rankings, actually. And one of the, we now manage the world rankings for four-person curling, for doubles, for all of the team ranking system versus the nation ranking system. And part of that also brings with it the opportunity for us to better manage the schedule, because I think, this is not a topic that we're under familiar with, Kevin. We've had talks about schedules forever, right? About making sure that there's opportunity to keep playing, that it doesn't end in January if somebody bows out of the playdowns, or that we have a season of team and then, you know, followed by we end the season with mixed doubles or something like that that keeps people playing. So I think that's the answer. I think it's just more control of the schedule and more organization of the schedule so that it fits better, allows teams that are playing four-person curling to, you know, kind of migrate to doubles when the time is right. We're not there yet, but that's kind of where I see us heading.
So where do you let's go down that path a little more, because you're right. For example, Team Kim, Eunjun Kim, out of Korea. I've worked with them over the last 5 years, and there's just nothing much for them to play in. Once the end of January hits, now Team Gim is here and at this Worlds, but that end of January till the Worlds, which is right now, there's nothing to play in for Team Gim either. And Team Kim, even worse, if Sung Young Ha as well, out of Korea. Three really good teams. Only one can come to the Worlds. The other two, there's no curling from the end of January until the Players' Championship in April. So yeah, there's some big gaping holes for a need for more big events for four person teams. But also in the mixed doubles, can we make it a different season? Like not have the championships in March and April because we're just fighting over each other. It's a mess. And I don't really understand taking the summer off any longer. I don't understand why we play it like a farmer. You'd be like in the rural Alberta, which I guess is kind of how it started, where, you know, we don't want to start until we get the seed in the bin. And then we don't really want to quit until, oh, we got to shut curling down because it's time to put the seed in the ground. And that's kind of the curling season. But is there some reason we can't do January 1 to January 1?
No, potentially we can. I think that what you might hear from some of the high performance departments is rest and recovery for the athletes, right? That and managing.
But wouldn't that separate the two a little bit easier?
Potentially, yeah. And I think it could also become a choice then, right? A team could better manage their own schedule if they knew they. Instead of having to align with the way it's been, the traditional schedule, they could, you know, maybe have a different strategy that included doubles. And to your point about do the events really have to be, do we have to all end all of the events in the spring? I can tell you from our standpoint, from organizing those events, if we could spread it out more, our people would just be ecstatic. it's a grind from the time that championships start. I mean, it's 3 or 4 months and they never leave the road, basically.
We had Brad Gougeau on, of course, and boy, he's one to definitely talk about where all of a sudden you play a reasonable schedule all fall. And then you get into the Brier, and if you win it, oh boy, now you're grinding that poor old hip. But anyway, Warren, go ahead.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us, Graham. And as Kevin suggested, you and I go back a long time as well. So glad to have you on the show. Yeah, the mixed doubles, certainly Kevin and I both agree it's something that's got to be moved down the line. Certainly the junior end of it has to be developed. I think other things got to be spurred along that can help more participation. Triples, stick curling is another thing we're trying to get moving to a greater degree. But let's change gears a bit and let's talk about some things to do with rules. And the first one I want to touch on is the hog line rule. And this one has been an issue for as long as I've been involved, going back to the 70s. And then I can remember 1980 when all of a sudden everybody set their hair on fire because guys were sliding 6 feet over the hog line. Nobody was saying anything. And then we began enforcement, which you couldn't really do because the guys doing it had to sit on the sidelines. And the only way you can really do it with a guy is you got to be right on the sheet at the open hand side, etc. But along came the electronic handles, and it seemed like the answer had been found. However, Curling Canada this year used them for two ends, I think, of the Scotties and ditched them. And I don't see the presence of any handles here at the Women's World. So what's going to happen with regard to proper enforcement of the hog line rule, which is important?
I could not agree with you more. The nightmare scenario for us, Warren, is that somebody draws the pin to win the Olympic gold medal, and the next day the picture in the paper is the hog, you know, the four feet over the hog line, right?
Oh my God!
Right? Yeah. So I can tell you we're on it, but I would have told you that a couple of years ago that we were on it as well. We're struggling from a technology standpoint, and I know there's things out there that that are working, but when we move into some of these, if you install something in a curling club and it's static and it never moves, it's pretty easy to get that refined. In our situation, we move all over the place. I think part of the situation, from what I understand at the Scotties, was an issue with metal. They think it was metal in the cement that was impacting the magnet strip, and all of those things. And we've had issues with batteries. We've had issues with batteries not staying in place. We've had issues with the wiring. And this goes all the way back, probably back to your time, Warren, when we did have that version of electronic handles that were working kind of, and or better. Anyway, I can tell you we're making it a priority. And we're not that far away from having them back on the field of play.
Yeah, because I'm like you. One of these days, there will be a curler throwing a shot for $1 million. And like you say, all of a sudden says somebody, he let that rock go over the hog line.
And there will be a picture to prove it.
I'll split the million with the guy if I don't say anything. If I'm the guy calling it.
And so it's something that really has to be addressed. The other issue is that of brushing. And again, this goes around and around and around. And I thought there was going to be some further scientific research experimenting done this past year, but I haven't heard about anything. We hear a lot of comments. We get a lot of emails and a lot of people concerned about what's going on. Is this game of sweeping or is it a game of curling? It's the same thing as the game of curling or a game of sliding. So I guess the same issue with the brushing. What's the WCAF or the World Curling now looking at with regard to further finding out what's going on and what to do with it?
I can tell you, I don't think I watch a curling game the same way as I used to after 2015. I literally, every shot I'm watching the sweeping. I barely see the conclusion of a shot, it feels like. But seriously, it's something we're watching very closely. So we have a group that is looking at stuff right now, and that goes right down to ice imaging, figuring out what's going on at the top of the pebble. Back to 2015 when we had the sweeping summit and all the problems we had in 2015-16, we had a process for looking at the top of the pebble that involved taking an image and then going to an electron magnetic microscope and kind of inverting it and being able to see it there. It took a long time. It was not an instantaneous thing. There's technology out there that gives us that. So there's a group that's working right now on that exactly to figure out what is happening with the top of the pebble, because there's a lot of talk about, you know, a lot of the terminology right now is carving, scratching, that sort of thing, knifing. So that I think typically refers to technique, but all of it kind of comes back to what was happening in 2015-16 when there was a lot of scratching that was happening on top of the pebble, right? And what we're seeing now is we're not seeing that scratching. So we can tell at the top of the pebble, that's not what's happening. But I think what we learned in 2015-16, the players have now applied to different sweeping techniques that is getting stones to do things that I think are, if they're not over the boundary, they've certainly reached the boundary of what we would see as acceptable.
This is really good because, of course, Kark and I talk over the kitchen table about this type of thing. And Ottawa had the type of surface. Now, I don't know really. You can see kind of the difference, but it was very susceptible to carving in Ottawa for the men's worlds. But the Brier that year was not. Is it the stones? Is it the ice surface? Is it like, what is it exactly? Because Kark said, like, you could carve all you want at the Brier that year, and it just didn't, it would make some difference, but not very much. But the Ottawa worlds, oh my goodness, it was remote control. And there's something to do with the surface in certain buildings, certain ice temperatures, whatever the case may be. Is there any knowledge in that regard yet?
Yeah. So I'll go take you back. So we did the sweeping summit in 2016 in a arena in Kemptville, Ontario, where we tried to replicate as best we could at the end of May, arena conditions. You know, we know we didn't have it perfect. They were able to make the ice that, so, you know, we knew what the dew point was. We knew what the temperature was. We could see what the frost was doing. That would kind of recreate to a certain extent those conditions. Most of the testing we've done since has been in curling clubs, where again, we do our best to attempt to replicate the conditions, but we can't make it exactly the same. The challenge has been to doing the testing in arenas and such. But when we, in 2018, we took a group of athletes to Morris, Manitoba, and we did our best again to recreate the situation. And back in those days, we took the equipment that had been approved to that point, and we ran it through a bunch of tests, and we didn't find that it was, it certainly wasn't extreme. There was some influence there. We could see what the influence was, not outside the parameters of, that I think anybody would find reasonable, but it's certainly in the last few years, what we're seeing is certainly coming up against the boundary of that. So I think in addition to the testing and things that are going on now, we're probably going to have to take an opportunity at a Worlds or, you know, like this, and just do some testing, you know, at night, bring some additional people in and additional athletes in and run it through its paces.
So let me ask you one more question, Graham, that's on a different topic, and it's a little political in nature. The World Championships and 13-team round robins are awfully long, and certainly to try and promote and sell the sport, to run an event that lasts this long is really difficult to do. I think maybe for the hardcore fans, they are attached to it, but anything you think might happen along the way to move either to even to 14 teams and go into two pools, which could be done in a much lesser time, or certainly the ideal situation would be a 10-team situation, or maybe you amalgamate the two championships again, which I've heard that as a rumor as well. Any chance of any of this stuff being considered or being changed?
So we talk about these ideas all the time. We have I'm part of the Competition and Rules Commission. It's chaired by Hugh Milliken. I'm on it. Another one of our board members, Rob Niven's on it. And then we have a representative from the World Curling Athlete Commission is on there. We have some expertise from member associations. So there's about a dozen of us, I think, that are on the commission. We talk probably at our meetings not in person meetings, so Zoom meetings and through email and stuff. I would say, you know, probably a third of our conversation is around format. So we've looked at pools. We've looked at there was an interesting idea that came in with a take on the ladder system where we would have we called it the 10 plus 10. So there's the top 10 are in the A pool, the bottom 10 are in the B pool. We looked at something as interesting as taking the top five teams out of the A, one from the B. So literally you could go from 20 to one in the same season. We rejected that for a number of reasons. We looked at two pools of eight, two pools of nine. The biggest thing with adding going to the pools of the idea of a pool, whether it's eight or nine or 10 in each of the pools, is the ability or the depth of field, I guess, is really what we're talking about. And when we look at marketing the sport, we're concerned that, you know, number 20 against number one, not really a great game to televise. So, right. I mean, it just isn't. There's a huge difference. In fact,
you know, sounds like the Brier.
You know, even you can make the argument, 15 to one or, you know, but I can tell you, you know, from our, we look at it all the time and the field is getting deeper. So the member associations that are really investing in their teams and in their athletes are getting much better. You know, we're probably not that far off now where the men's, you know, you get back to 16, it's still pretty good. Like it's the caliber's pretty good. Not quite as deep at the women yet, but it's getting there. So I think what'll happen is once we see that depth of field increase, there's certainly pressure on us to have more teams at the Worlds. And the only way that we would be able to do it is with pools. But I think we're not quite there yet.
Graham, we have very dedicated listeners to our show, and we've got a good following. They're loyal, and when they sink their teeth into a topic, man, do they sink their teeth into it. And we get, you know, we try and sort of mix up the show, but three of the things that we seem to deal with all the time because they want to hear about it and they want to hear Kevin and Warren's opinion. One is blank ends. One is the length of the game from 10 ends to eight. And I guess the other one now is our team's going to be allowed to play with only three guys because they're having so much success. How much does that have to do, Graham, with World Curling about the trying to standardize some rules? I know the game sport itself is, well, do what you ever want to do at your club level and, you know, and do whatever you want to do here. But where is World Curling on those things or other things that you think are in the forefront?
So I guess in order, or maybe I'll take the 10-8 one first. That one, I mean, obviously it's a very big difference of opinion at the world level amongst our members as well. From a financial standpoint, 10 makes way more sense for us. What it would cost us in our broadcast and marketing arrangements is significant. However, I think we also understand that the world in general, when it comes to sport, is going to smaller, more tighter timeframes. But so I think I won't say any more than that on 8 versus 10. But I do think it related to 8 and 10 is the pace of play. And I think we have a huge pace of play issue in curling. And so it doesn't matter whether you play 10 ends or 8 ends. We had a game yesterday in extra ends. So we were almost 3.5 hours from the start time to the end of that game. That's crazy. And they both of them used all their clock, which they're welcome to do. If that clock was, instead of a game clock, was an end clock, you know, that game, even on an extra end, probably wouldn't have been tightened up half an hour. We look at what baseball's done. I mean, they put the pitch clock in and they dropped 25 minutes off a broadcast. That's huge. So this is me speaking now. I would like to see us solve the pace of play thing first. And then once we've got that sorted out, then I think we can have the absolute best debate with all the right information around 8 and 10. So,
right.
So I think that's where I see that at. And you'll have to remind me of the other two things. My memory's not very good.
People talk about blank ends. It's going to come up. I'm looking ahead at the show. There's going to be an email on it again today. The people are going, I hate it.
Well, they're getting more, Jimmy, they're getting more passionate. One thing about Graham, our podcast, we get a huge amount of social media and emails, a crazy amount, and yeah. Warren reads them all. but it's becoming very passionate, this thing.
Yeah, no, so we talk about that at the competition rules a lot as well. I think one of the things that's helped, it's only anecdotal at this point. We'll go back and look at the numbers at the end of the season, but the no tick zone has helped the blank end situation because it just forces more stones in play. When there is a blank, it often comes from there being 8 rocks in play at the end of the seconds stones. So if you get a blank end out of 8 rocks in play, that's not as bad as somebody that slips one into the rings and you get 15 hits following that. That's the one I think is the problem. We actually did, you know, lots of people have suggested that we look at, if you blank the end, you lose the hammer. We've looked at that idea, but our fear is that it will actually make the game more defensive because then the play would be right in the rings to start to force the other guy to take one.
Right.
So I think there's ways around that. I do think, though, that in addition to the no-tick zone, we put that in a couple of years ago. The idea of not being able to tick a corner guard is something that I think is makes a lot of sense. The problem that we have is being able to police it, because if you get the slight tick, or if you get the touch and it doesn't move, it's going to be impossible to tell, you know, whether the thing moved. With the center line, we can tell that pretty easily. But I think even if we were to look at not being able to advance the corner guard into the rings like they do in mixed doubles to get rid of the power play, I think that would be an improvement. That's my personal opinion. And it's certainly, all of that is something we're looking at.
And the last one was, there's lots of teams winning with only 3 guys. People are like, hey, that ain't fair.
The number of wins by teams with 3 players is incredible. And, you know, I think a lot of the top athletes that we talk to say that, you know, you give those first 2 players a chance to throw 3 stones and get their weight and get to know those stones intimately. Boy, they make a lot of shots, and it is something that's on our radar. I'm not sure what to do about it. We've had some pretty extreme ideas, including if you go with 3, you play with 7 stones. I'm not sure how. Oh, yeah. I'm not, you know, that would solve the problem of somebody not playing. Yeah,
right? Yeah, real quick.
And the idea that right, and we I don't think we've seen it yet. I hope we haven't, but I mean the idea that somebody is sick and you know, and you should still be able to play with three somehow. Mm-hmm. But the idea that somebody might become sick, if you get my point, if they're not going too well, you know, that's the thing that that concerns us. So I we're definitely looking at it. And the other thing is there's another piece here that is we have to keep in mind, and that we're, you know, we enjoy being part of the Olympic program, but mm-hmm. those accreditations at the Olympics that we enjoy, you know, five players. If the IOC mm-hmm. If the IOC ever stopped to think, well, actually, if they're playing with three, why are we giving five? Save a lot of money.
Save a lot of money.
Give those accreditations to other sports. So, you know, that's the sort of things that are we're thinking about as well.
Graham Prowse has been our guest. Boy, this is great, Graham. I know you're busy. It's a big week for you guys, and we really appreciate you coming on. Those are great answers that you gave us, and we appreciate your openness about all of it. Graham Prowse, Vice President of the WCF, where we no longer give an F. Okay, I had to do it twice. Sorry about that. It's not World Curling Federation. It's World Curling. Graham's the Vice President of the World Curling, and thanks a lot, Graham. Have fun. Try and have some fun the rest of the week, and hopefully you don't get too bombarded with a bunch of issues while you're there. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Jim, I appreciate being asked, and happy to come back at some point too. I really enjoy these chats, and you know, really the issues and things that you guys bring out and into the public and get talked about is awesome. It's great. I'm glad you're doing it.
You're gonna talk your way into being a host if you're not careful. You better be careful.
Yeah, we're looking for one.
Stop it, Warren. Stop it. That was.
Thanks, Graham.
Take it easy, Graham. We'll see you later.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Graham.
What's happening around the curling world is brought to you by Jackpot City. Jackpot City casino games perfectly made for you. You know what's perfectly made for me, Kevin? You giving us an update on the World Games in Nova Scotia. The Women's Worlds is on, and Rachel Holman is representing Canada.
All right. Yeah, thanks, Jimmy. Well, there's lots going on here, to be honest. The first weekend, the crowds are really good. During the week, of course, everybody gets back to work during the day, and the evenings are pretty good. This afternoon, they brought in a ton of kids. The place was packed with kids, so the building was extremely loud, but all good. It was funny. So I was talking to one of the announcers today, Sandra, and we were laughing about how when you're walking down the street here, you got to be prepared to say hi to everybody. About by the time you get to the rink, there's 100 people, and you need to be prepared to say hi to everybody and have a chat. To leave the hotel and get to the rink, you've got to leave at least half an hour to talk all the way to the rink with everybody. It's such a friendly place here in Sydney. Well, let's talk about the teams. So Canada, yes, doing excellent. Now, as we're recording, Canada is on the ice with Switzerland. So that is the big game going on, both undefeated. Right now is the fourth end, and they're tied 2-2. Canada has hammer. So that's exactly where we are in this thing. Denmark, Italy, both playing fantastic at 5-1. So they both are at one loss. And Korea as well, but Korea has played most of the bottom teams in the field. So they have a whole bunch of really tough games ahead. They have Turkey next, but then after that, they've got Italy, Sweden, Norway, USA, and Canada. They're at 4-1 right now, but they've got some tough games ahead. Sweden, who started out really slow at 0-3, are now at 3-3. But they've played most of the heavy hitters. They do still have Korea and Switzerland to play. But other than that, they play the bottom teams. So I would say Sweden is still looking good for a spot, even after the start they had. Okay, and the other teams that are sort of on the edge, Norway's at 2-4, but they've got quite a few good teams yet to play. And the U.S., have a couple of tough teams to play, but they're just struggling right now. Tabitha Peterson, you know, going in, I thought, you know, they have a really good shot, but they've still got quite a few toughies to play. They've got to play Sweden yet. They've got to play Korea yet. So, but they might have an outside chance of getting in yet, USA.
I'll tell you a great story, Kevin. When you talk about it, you got to say hi to everyone. Danny Murphy is a big guy down there, a big business guy. He owns all the Tim Hortons, and he had an event. He invited me to MC it. And I know him, and he said, "Now listen, buddy, bye. I got to tell you something. You go pretty fast. I'm telling you, when you people stop to say hi to you, say hi, Jimmy. Okay? Don't blow by them." I said, "No problem, Danny." You know, I kind of ignored it. I did my bit on stage. I walked off, and there was a guy there. He said, "Hey, Jimmy, good job there, fella. That was fantastic." I said, "Listen, just give me a second. I'm going to have a smoke, you know." He said, "Oh, you're a big effing star, are you? You don't have time for the little boys. Go F yourself." It was my first introduction to I said, Danny was behind. He said, "I told you, man." Love the people, though, and I totally get what you're saying. So, Warren, how are we going to do our picks? We've got there's six teams make it to the playoffs. I will tell you this. I love the big round robin. I haven't seen it in a while. When I looked at all those scores, I had my head around Pool A and Pool B going, "Oh, okay, well, it's all done. They're 5-0 or 5-1. It's like, no, you got to play 12 games, man. So there's still lots on the line. We assume Canada's going to make it, Warren, so we're gonna leave them out. I'll do one pick, and you and Kevin will do two, Warren. Is that how you have that set up?
I have, and let's just talk about the playoff format. So six teams go to the finals showdown.
Yep.
One and two go directly to the fours. Number four will play five, and the winner will go against one in one semifinal. Three will play six, and that winner will go against two in the other semifinal. So at this point, we'll pick six teams that we think is going to be in there. We're not going to determine one and two and three and four, just who the six are going to be. So we're assuming Canada is going to be in there. So, Jim, you get to pick the first team besides Canada that you think will be there.
Switzerland.
For sure.
Way to step out.
Why would you say that?
Four-time champs.
I'll tell you why I said it quick, because you always steal my picks. Okay? So that's why I jumped in right away.
Do you realize that game on the ice here this afternoon, that she has won 42 straight games at the world championship level. So she's going for number 43 today, or her first loss in 42 games. And Rachel Holman is looking for, she has won 21 straight games this year in various competitions. So this is quite a battle of the Titans. So you're going to go with Switzerland. All right. So we've got Canada, Switzerland. I'm going to pick two. So I'm going to probably, I think, select Italy. And I think probably Korea will be my second choice. So I'll take Italy and Korea. Kevin?
Well, I've got to go with Denmark. And I think Sweden's coming on. Norway also has a really good shot, but I like Sweden. I'm going to pick Anna Hasselborg.
Yeah, I think that's a good choice as well. I've been watching them the last couple of days a bit, and they seem to improve dramatically. And Denmark, they are a surprise team. They had a pretty good game against Holman. They kind of struggled at the end, but that team has done surprising things before, so they could be there. Canada, Switzerland, Italy, Korea, Denmark, and Sweden. And we'll check on Friday night to see how we did.
Okay, I got to do my introduction of each topic in between barks of the dog. Does that make? This thing hates my guts. It can hear my voice right now. It's freaking out. Next topic, Warren, the Canadian University and College Championships concluded last week in Fredericton. What do you got?
Okay, so this is an event. We got two separate ones. One is university, one is college. It's been going on for a while. So let's take a look at who the final winners were. On the college side with the women, Concordia's Gabrielle Wood defeated Southern Alberta Institute of Technology Shannon Cayley by a score of 8-5 to win the women's gold. And on the college side in the men's division, Humber College's Jacob Domson defeated Mohawk College's Jacob Jones by a score of 7-6 to take the gold medal. In the University of Women, Serena Gray Withers from the University of Alberta defeated the University of Waterloo's Cecilia Evans 10-7 to take that gold. And the University Men, the University of Regina's Joshua Bryden defeated University of Dalhousie's Owen Purcell in the gold medal game by a score of 8-5. And Owen Purcell, of course, is a name we've heard quite a bit at the men's and junior circles in curling. So congratulations to all those winners. I think this is a really important aspect of curling, that's starting to grow, because this offers an opportunity for players who come out of juniors and they're 21. They're really not maybe ready to move into men's or women's play. And this is an extension of curling at the high level that helps to develop them a little bit further. So good on the university and colleges for doing this. And we hope it goes bigger and improves.
And U of A, Kev.
U of A, yeah.
Our home team, yeah.
Doing great. And that's what I always did too, Jimmy, was play the college. Like Sate did well. And Jules used to coach Nate. And that's actually where I met Shauna. She was on the girls' team and I was on the guys' team.
Oh, okay.
At Nate. Yeah, actually, way back in the day. And you mentioned Purcell being a name we know. Well, Bryden out of Regina is certainly a name we know. Randy Bryden and the Bryden family of Randy, Gary, and so on.
How'd you do as a college curler, Kev?
Not bad. It was funny. So we went to the Canadian Championships in Brandon. First game, we played the host. So the only reason they're there is because they're host. So, okay, we go out there. They make everything, beat us in an extra end. And there weren't any playoffs back then. It was just a round robin and whoever won the round robin. So we weren't worried about it.
Okay.
Go in the next game and the next game and the next game. We're 3-1, 4-1. The host, 3-0, 4-0. Is anybody going to beat these guys? Nope. So we ended up in the end, whatever it is, 6-1 or 7-1. They went undefeated. They got the gold. We got the silver. First game, we play them at their curling club. But this team was fantastic. Hey, you guys, send us an email if you guys are listening that were on that team. It was the first time I saw a green and yellow house. Because it was in Brandon. The houses in the building were green and yellow. I'll never forget it. We played the host. I thought, you know, don't worry about the host. Well, they were great. And they went undefeated. And they beat us in the end.
And then when they win everything, all the other competitors go, you know what? They shouldn't even been in it. They're just the host. They didn't qualify.
They didn't win Matt Dole. But I think they should have. They were good
stuff.
And please send us an email if you guys are listening. I'd really appreciate it. I do not remember the team name. I wish I did.
Warren, over to you. Give us an update on the Canadian Mixed Doubles Championship underway in Fredericton.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting that this event is on the same week as the Women's Worlds, but it is. So let's talk about it for a bit. The way it's structured, there's 32 teams in this competition. 14 of them are provincial territorial winners, and then the other 18 are there via rank. So there's four pools with eight teams in each pool, and at the conclusion of the round robin, the best eight teams will advance to a sudden death playoff. So what I'm going to give today is who are the teams that have a shot at being in those final eight if the whole thing was to end tomorrow. So in the A pool, we have Laura Walker and Kirk Myers at 4-0, which are no strangers. Also Laurie St. Georges and Felix Asselin at 3-1, along with Ryan Kleiter and Madison Kleiter, who, again, are no strangers from Saskatchewan. In Pool B at 3-1, three teams, Marley Powers and Luke Saunders. Luke Saunders, again, they're representing Nova Scotia, their provincial team, and he was in the Brier, of course, for the last couple of years. Also, Paige Papley and Evan Van Amsterdam are at 3-1, and Amanda Selinsky and Aaron Selinsky are also at 3-1, and they are representing Alberta. In Pool C, Taylor Rice Hansen and Corey Chester at 4-1. That's the only team right now out of Pool C that would be in the running if the whole thing was to end today. And in Pool D, Kadriana and Colton Lott, another familiar name to us, at 5-0. Another one, Jocelyn Peterman, Brent Gallant at 4-1. And the one that's missing from all this is Jennifer Jones and Brent Lang, who are the defending champions, and they're currently sitting at 2-3 and are going to have to really get some things going if they're going to make that final playoff. So that all ends this weekend in Fredericton to declare the Canadian Mixed Doubles champion.
Hot Rock Topics is brought to you by Coyote Tractor. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, UTVs, ZTRs, and compact construction equipment to do it. Coyote, we dig dirt. Okay, here's one of our emails for today. We've had this before, but we thought there's always differences of opinion about blank ends. This comes from Arden and Joanne. I'm sure it's been brought up before, but we wanted your opinions on the multiple blanks, like in the 3-4 game at the Brier. Carruthers-Jacobs versus Dunstone, we found it to be very boring TV watching. as we did when we went to many live events. When it's three blanks in a row, we feel that after one blank, then the team has to give up hammer if they blank again. What are your thoughts? That's from Martin and Joanne from Beaver Lodge. I know where I've been up to Beaver Lodge. Good bar there. Sidetracks. Kevin?
Well, you know, and we've had this for, well, since we started the podcast. It's been years now, but it's getting louder, I think, Warren. I think we're getting more and more and more comments, more emails. Yeah, Jim, you know, we used to say that we'd say, well, yeah, but the problem is if you don't allow blanks, it'll just go the other way. But it's becoming louder and louder, and it is. We're in the entertainment industry, and to just be allowed these blanks, maybe it is something we have to worry about. I can't believe I'm saying it, you know, because it's not at all what I thought. It's just becoming such a great amount of comments that it's just something that I just don't know if Curling Canada and World Curling can really ignore. It's becoming, the beat of the drum has become so loud and continuous. And without a podcast like this, I just don't know how enough people would get the question out. We've become this mechanism, I guess, where we get all these, and Warren's the one who knows how many emails we get. It's ridiculous. It's crazy on a subject like this. What do you think, Warren? Because you're the one who opens all the emails. But it's becoming really loud.
Yeah, it's not just the emails. Our social media, of course, has grown immensely this year. And there's been an awful lot of comments and complaints about it through the social media end of things as well. So I think it is something that's got to be thought about and looked into. And I'm not really sure what the answer is. I've thought of various things. It's just like that last rock in the first end has become so, so important. I look back at the Brier, the last four games, the team that had last rock won all four, and they opened with a deuce or a three, and the other team just wasn't able to get it back. And so I don't know, again, maybe if we were to divide the game. And this works, I think, really well on an eight-hand game. If you had the choice of hammer in the first end or the fourth, but not both. Maybe in that as well, we limit the number of ends that you can blank. Maybe you can blank two ends in the first four and maybe one end in the last four or something of this nature. I think there's got to be some experimenting done to see what can make this more appealing, because there's a little question. If fans are complaining about it to the degree they seem to be, it's something that has to be taken a look at, because as Kevin says, we're in the entertainment business, and everything has to be done to ensure that the whole product is as entertaining as it can be.
Right. I'll tell you what the biggest problem is going to be, is all the fans don't like it. Let's say we'll take a chance there, okay, that the percentage of the fans don't like it. The players are fine with it, Kev. You know, how are you going to get inroads or make inroads when the I think Mark Kennedy was on. He's like, we're fine with blank ends, man. We're fine with it. So I see difficulty there convincing whoever Curling Canada or whoever.
There's no question, Jim, it's going to be difficult. This is only a year ago when we started talking, maybe 2 years ago now that we started talking about this on the podcast. And I'm going, well, there's not that many emails, right? We weren't getting that many messages. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't like it is now. It's getting louder and louder. And that just means more and more people are being, are feeling passionate about this situation. And so as that happens, more and more people, well, it really gets more and more difficult to ignore. And that's sort of my point to this whole thing.
Well, and it's, I always look back. I mean, soccer has a huge strength, but it's always never been that appealing to me because of the 0-0 and 0-1 scores. Offense is entertaining. Defense is not. And so that's why we have a five-rock rule and a no-tick rule. We're trying to create offense, and having 0-0 at the end of five ends is like the nil-nil soccer game after it's concluded.
All right. Thank you, Arden. Thank you, Joanne. I think it's hot. Hot, H-O-T-T-E, from Beaver Lodge.
It's a hot rock topic.
It's a hot rock. There we go. Very good, Warren. I like that. Hey, honey, Warren made a funny. Here we go. This is from Joe Brown. We've had this for a while. We're finally getting around to it. And it's a good one. Hello, Jim, Warren, and Kevin. Since quote-unquote Broomgate in 2016, what's Broomgate, Warren, first before we go on?
Oh, this was when they did a bunch of experimenting with the brush heads and determined that there was only one that was really legal, which now they all have to use.
Since Broomgate in 2016, we have seen teams at all levels adapt their brushing techniques to try and manipulate the path of the curling stones. When it comes to making a stone curl, we rarely hear the skip or vice call out to leave the moving stone alone to catch the curl. There are teams that brush with many techniques to make the stone curl. After watching the most recent Grand Slam in Red Deer, many of these shots didn't work out as planned. I do acknowledge that certain players on teams who have perfected their technique can get positive results. However, the vast majority of the results were marginal. We will hear, whoa, never, right off, to allow rock to curl on its own ever again. Will we ever hear it ever again? Thanks. That's from Joe Brown.
Yeah, you know, this is a topic that is being discussed, actually. How to deal with the, there are a few things, but certainly the sweeper who is on one side and jumps to the other side behind the rock. So basically acting as two sweepers in one person, should they be allowed to jump from one side of the rock to the other? That would be a fairly simple rule to put in, where just the one has to, the sweeper has to stay on the one side. So that's being discussed. Who knows what the answer will be, but that's a concern. People jumping back and forth, and that's why three-person teams have become so strong. If you had to stay on the one side as a sweeper, you choose whichever side you want, but you have to stay on that side, a three-person team would not be an advantage anymore. Mm-hmm. Because you wouldn't be able to keep it straight and carve right on the same stone. Okay, so that matters a lot. This knifing technique where it's a really hard push down, almost like sticking your broom to the ice in an attempt to slow the stone down, that's a concern. Can we get away from that? Well, maybe. But these are some of the things that it's fairly recent. You're only talking 2016 when Brad Gushue and company figured out how to carve the curling stone over the summer prior to that season. And then now only this many years later, only 8 years later, and people are starting to perfect certain things. But like any sport, the evolution of sport, as the players figure things out, sometimes, you know, you need a rule maker, not a lot different than the square grooves. If you remember the square grooves in golf, Jimmy?
Yes, I do.
You know, you're in 6-inch grass, knock the ball out and stick it right next to the pin. You could take all the backspin with it. But anyway, so there's all kinds of things that happen in sport, and the sport itself needs to deal with it, so it's a level playing field. And that's sort of what we need to do now. It's kind of, you know, it's just something that's being looked at, and what it exactly needs to be done. Well, we'll let the experts figure out that as far as the sweepers go, the ones that are currently playing the game. But it's a concern because to their point, the clean is hardly a thing anymore. It's just you make sure you hold it out wide enough to the hog line and then carve it to wherever you need to.
Wasn't there a bit of a cheat, you guys, too, about the sweeping technique? We had Carrie Anderson on. She's like, oh, yeah.
There's accusation as to how they're actually applying that knifing technique that they are dumping to slow the rock.
Warren, is Joe asking the right questions here?
Yeah, I think so, because there's so many things at stake here and so many things in play. The ice conditions have a great degree to do with how effective any of these techniques are. And some ice conditions and the surface is softer, they can do a lot more things than they can if it's harder, which means arenas versus curling clubs, again, can be quite a different situation. I think, again, it's going to require some very scientific experimenting being done and results recorded, and everybody agreeing in the end that when these results have been determined, that whatever is going to happen as a result of it, that everybody is going to buy into it. I think, as Kevin says, it's got to be a level playing field, and I guess it's, do we want the game to become curling, or do we want it to be sweeping? And we can go the same route with regard to the hog line. Do we want the game to be curling or sliding? And so there are certain rules that have to keep the game playable as we know it. And I think the brushing one is right now one that's in many people's minds questionable, depending upon the strength of the people. And as I mentioned, the ice conditions, all kinds of different things are possible. Some people there's assumptions that maybe some things are happening that maybe aren't. And maybe there's assumptions some things that aren't happening that are. So I think there's a cloud over it right now. There needs to be more work done from proper scientific experiments and ones that everybody's going to recognize are going to be accepted once they're completed.
There you go. That was Hot Rock Topics for this week. What are you hearing? Our next subject, a number of people during the Scotties and Briar were asking questions about player percentages. And this week you got the following email. G'day, Warren, Kevin, and Jim. I have a question about the percentages of how a player is playing. Do the players themselves pay much attention to these percentages? Are they important to them? It seems to me that they are still making really good shots, even when their percentage is low or lower than their opponents. Thank you for your time. Love your podcast. That's Denise Benson. Thank you, Denise.
Well, first of all, good day, Denise. Percentages are really important, I think. And there has to be a great deal of work before the event even starts to make sure that all the people taking the stats are on the same page as far as how they're going to tabulate them. So that's really important. And having knowledge with the stats people, like curling knowledge, so they understand, you know, if you're a little deep on a certain shot, is that okay? Mm-hmm. Right? The tolerance of the shot you're playing. It's curling is kind of a different sport that way, to understand what's good and what's absolutely not good. And that can be so close to the same shot. Mm-hmm. So the knowledge has a lot to do with it. Because as a curler, it's really important to be able to look at your opposition and understand, well, having trouble with the intern, shooting really good with the outturn, hitting better than drawing, whatever the case may be. When you're trying to match rocks, it matters a lot as to the set that Pick Nicodine is using on sheet B. Watch that game, watch them throw, and then see that they shot 98 with that set of rocks. That's likely a pretty good set of rocks, and you might want to use the order from 1 to 8 that they used.
Right.
But if you can't really trust the percentages, then it's really a little more difficult to understand, to keep track of all the stones in the building. So that's from a player's standpoint and a coach's standpoint. And from a commentator, it's really important to be able to talk after 6 draws, 7 draws, 8 draws, 9 draws, so on, last event to this event, how players and individuals are doing in all aspects of the game. So it's a really important thing. Data is really important in sport. Mm-hmm. And this is one piece of data that really is important in many aspects.
Warren, you got a bit of history about this, the percentages. Break it down for us a little bit.
Yes, I had a lot to do with this back in the early days. So let's talk about where it came from. And Kevin would probably be aware of this, I think. An old sports writer with the Edmonton Journal, Don Buckets Fleming, went to every Brier game for years, and he scored the players. And how he did it, and he developed this original concept, he had a 4-point system that he used to score every shot that Alberta played in every Brier for I don't know how many years. And the system, basically, if you made the shot exactly as called, it's 4 points. If you were to make the shot but not completely as called, it would be 3. If you made a half shot, it would be 1. If the shot was of some benefit, you got a single. And so it was a 4-point system. So to give an example, if you're asked to hit and roll behind a rock, that would be 4 points. If you were asked to hit and roll behind a rock and you only partly buried it, you would get 3 points. If you hit and stayed with the shot, you would get 2 points. And if you hit and rolled out, you would get 1. So that's how the system was originally used, as developed by Buckets. I was involved with this back when it started with World Curling, is where it started back in 1977. I actually scored at 3 consecutive world championships back in that point in time. As it sits today, it's very dependent upon the ability of the people scoring. So when these events happen, it's volunteers from the local area that the event's being held in that are trained, and they look for competitive players who have some experience with the shots. And they're trained on how to do this scoring more or less, as I've discussed it. And they experiment and they practice it a bit. It's certainly not what you'd call it subjective. And it varies on how difficult and how hard the marker takes a look at things. The other thing that really has a big impact on it is the skip signaling exactly what they want the player to do. And sometimes that doesn't happen. So the scorer has to guess at what they're wanting to do. So this creates a little bit of fog in it. The other thing that can happen, and this is usually done in systems where you've got very experienced scorers, you can put in a bonus system. And I think the World Federation, I do believe, does use a bonus system in some of their events. And if a player does a shot that's exceptional, they can be awarded 5 or 6 for it, depending upon how exceptional it is. So a 6 would probably be awarded to a player if the shot they made could be actually determined to be the shot that won or lost the game for them. So that's the way the system works. I would suggest that because it's volunteers who are doing this for the most part, they tend to be lenient. And so percentages are probably a little higher usually than they really are. And I watched an event, and it's funny how it goes from event to event, where I'm going, I wonder how those scorers were instructed just by looking at the percentages. They were told to be fairly easy on how they award shots. And in the next thing I can look at and say, yeah, they've been told to be a little tougher. And it can vary from sheet to sheet depending upon who's doing it. So it's interesting stuff. It does tell you a lot, as Kevin says. It's data that we need to be compiling more of in curling, and hopefully it's going to continue to get better as it moves along.
Very good. Good stuff, boys. This is another week where we're going to do a bunch of shows. When are we on again, Warren? What are we going to do? The round robin has 3,000 games to finish. When are we going to do the rest?
It ends Friday night, so we'll do a show Friday night and then one Saturday going into the finals.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks a lot to our sponsors. They're the best, Jackpot City, Coyote, and Goldline. We encourage you to support them because they support us. Check out our Facebook group, our Facebook page. Thanks a lot to Rod Paulson and his company, In-House Strategies. If you need any sort of media stuff done at all, reach out. We'll connect you with Rod. Email us, insidecurling@gmail.com. Kevin asked for your emails this week. Who remembers the green and yellow rings at the...
Yeah, and the Canadian Championship for the college. What year was that? Boy, something like 86 or 87. But the team will remember. The team will remember. They beat us in the first game and then went undefeated. I'd love to know. I'd love to hear from them.
God, 1986. That's way back when Warren was 70.
Jim, you'll never make it as a comedian. Give it up.
Thanks a lot to everyone for listening and tuning in. We love it. We're getting the show is growing. The show is growing thanks to all of you, and it's growing rapidly, and we really appreciate it. We love doing it. We have a lot of fun, and we'll be back on Friday night with another episode of, what should we call it, Warren? Inside the World?
Inside the World.
Inside the World? The women's world is on. Go, Rachel. Talk to you later, everybody. See you, Kev. See you, Warren.
Hey, thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jim.